Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and like it or not, the calendar on the wall says it is almost back to school time. And my first guest today is New York City Schools Chancellor Joel Klein to look ahead and to debrief kind of a rough summer with standardized test results across New York State being recalculated substantially downward. Mr. Chancellor, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. Nice to be with you, Brian.
The big news this summer has been the State Education Department's admission that the big standardized tests had been getting too easy. So instead of 69% of city students passing the English test last year, only 42% did this year on the new way to measure them. The pass rate for math fell from 82% to 54%. Based on the new way to score the test. And again, listeners, to be clear, these were state tests that the city relies on, not city tests. So, Chancellor Klein, do you feel deceived by the State Education Department, and do you feel betrayed after all your hard work pegged to improving performance on these particular tests?
I don't, because I think the hard work resulted in real improvements. And I think we've got to focus on two things. What are the standards? And in New York and throughout America, we've set our standards too low. We know that in a global economy, our children are not getting prepared. So it's not just a New York State problem. If you look around the country, you're going to see the same set of issues come up time and time again. Now, when you do that, necessarily, some children who pass the first time around are not going to pass because it takes 30 questions right rather than 20. I think that's a good development, but I understand from the individual child and a family that you can be concerned about that. But that's very separate from the fact that in New York City, by every measure, the students have moved forward, have made real progress on graduation rates, on the national tests, and on the state tests. So now the challenge for us, Brian, is to make sure families understand their children didn't do less well this year than last. What was required was more of them. I'll give you a simple example. If, in fact, you're a good golfer and you have a 400-yard hole and it's a par four, you can succeed at that hole time and time again. If they move it to a par three, you may not succeed at it. That doesn't mean your golf game isn't getting better. It means that the demands are higher. And the challenge, and why I'm so glad to be with you this morning, is to explain to our parents and families that all of us need to make sure we do a better job and that we need to insist that our kids meet the highest standards, because global economies, all the stuff you talk about on the show in terms of jobs, that's going to be demanded of our children.
To be fair to you, not all the measures are bad. You were mentioning some of these. The city has come up, from what I've read, 11 points on the national fourth grade math and reading scores, which are not considered dumbed down. The city is doing better compared to other counties in the state. But you still have these things that must feel bad from going going from 82% to 54% passing on the math test, 69 to 42 on the reading.
So in one sense, of course, everybody, when you say it that way, everybody says, of course, you must feel bad. But in one sense, I look at it this way. If I compare it to where I started, we would have been at 19% proficiency in math, or at 20% proficiency, and it gone up to 54%. But also, let's talk about those national tests, because, as you say, nobody thinks they're dumbed down. Nobody thinks you can teach to those tests. Here's New York City. In 3 out of 4 of the national tests, we've got very big gains. In the same test, the rest of New York State, which is a lot more middle class, a lot less challenged in terms of the student population, while we're going up 11 points and 11 points and so forth, they were flat. And so the question really is, what are we doing in New York City that isn't happening in the rest of the state? And I think what we're doing in New York City is a lot of major reform that is actually improving the outcome. Same thing is true when you look at our graduation rates. They have a federal calculation of graduation rates that shows that we're going up dramatically. So no question, our job today, and I want to be clear about this, the 54 and 42 number that you're using, we're going to take those up. We want our kids to meet the higher standards. You never hear me say we should keep the lower standards. That's not something I've taken the position for. I've taken a position for higher standards, but I don't want other people, and there are people with agendas out there, who want to really put out a lot of misinformation about what this means. So some people suggest to me, well, last year you had 84% proficient, now you have 54% proficient, so those kids perform less well. That's not true. That's not true.
Listeners, you can call in and ask a question for New York City Schools Chancellor Joel Klein, or ask one online. If you call in, no big speeches, no grandstanding, but you can say something and ask him anything you want. 212-433-WNYC for New York City Schools Chancellor Joel Klein right now. 212-433-9692. Or post a comment or a question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. But on this question of whether you feel or should feel deceived or betrayed on this test score bubble, did you have no idea that this was going on? You know that the state passing rates did not jibe with the National Standardized Test Results, the NAEP, which are considered the gold standard. For years, we had Education Secretary Duncan on our show last year. We had education philanthropist Eli Broad, who I know is a supporter of yours, on our show the year before, saying the state test scores in New York, as in many states, were, I think Broad called them, a sham. So what did you suspect, and when did you suspect it?
Well, the mayor wrote about this 4 years ago. He talked about New York and other states dumbing down their proficiency standards. And it was an op-ed in the Washington Post in the summer of 2006. I've been all over the country calling for national standards and aligning the state tests with the federal tests.
But then were you making claims of success based on the previous numbers, 69%, 82%, knowing on some level that they were a sham?
No, but what we did time and again, Brian, is always compare New York City to the rest of the state and to other big cities. So we always said whether the tests got harder or easier, and there was, you know, arguments in all over the place, we always said two things. That compared to everyone else, New York City's progress was indisputable. If you look at the overall scores, if you look at the number of kids who are performing well in New York compared to other cities and the rest of the state. Second thing we said, though, is we need to raise them. Now, that, it seems to me, again, we don't set those benchmarks, and the state does. But when we say under federal law and under state law that a certain number of kids are proficient, I think we are allowed to report that in good faith. By the same token, we were out there early saying raise the bar. And the question becomes inevitably, why did other people wait the time that they waited?
In good faith, you could trumpet the scores that you thought were less than 100% meaningful. Did you? I don't know. Did you have news conferences in 2009 saying, hey, look, we got 82% on math passing?
We did, but we always put it in a context. You never saw us say, because this argument, are state tests too easy? Are they too hard? And we were very clear about this. Look at our gains compared to other large cities that are comparable to us in New York and compared to the rest of the state. And the story is unequivocal on the following. In 2002, when the mayor took over, we were very close in terms of performance, very close to the big four cities, the other big cities. And we were far away from the rest of the state.
In New York, Buffalo, Albany.
Buffalo, Syracuse, Rochester, and Yonkers. Those are the big four with us, the big five. And we were very close to them in 2002 on these state tests. Now, in more and more instances, we're very close to the rest of the state, which is much more middle class, much less minority. So we always pointed out those differences, and those are important differences. And then, of course, we pointed out that that was reconfirmed by the federal tests. But we would never, I mean, the mayor wouldn't write an op-ed if it's in a Washington major media without saying exactly what Eli Broad and others said. We have got to raise standards. Other states are going to go through this same situation. But even now, just again, if you look at New York City from 2002 to 2010 with the new rates, we've gone up overall about 8 points in proficiency. The other cities went down 2 or 3 points. The rest of the state went down 2 points. So that's where you can anchor this, and you don't have to get into the debates, was it easier or harder, because everybody took the same test.
New York City Schools Chancellor Joel Klein, we'll get to your phone calls for him in a few minutes. Our lines are full already with people calling in, so don't try at the moment. Here is a clip of State Education Commissioner Steiner on our show this summer talking about recalibrating the way the standardized tests are scored.
What we're looking at is saying to parents, students, teachers, look, we want to use words like basic and proficient in a really straightforward, practical way. When your child is told that she is proficient on a fifth grade, seventh grade test, that should mean that she's on a really good trajectory for a strong set of options later in her education.
So, what's your reaction to that? And particularly as we talk about moving forward, as you say you want to, and of course everybody wants to move forward from here, he referred to the breadth and depth. If you have 30 questions, you can't test the field of knowledge in math, arts, any subject with sufficient breadth and depth to avoid the problem that we just discussed. So do you have to broaden and deepen the curriculum now?
Absolutely. And you have to test more complex skills. The demands on our children in the 21st century are going to require that. Let me give you one statistic that sort of really resonates in my mind. In 1950, 60% of America's workforce were high school dropouts. 8% were college educated. Today, almost 40% are college educated and about 8% are high school dropouts. So the demands in a global economy, in a high-tech economy, are going to be dramatically different. And we, of course, have got to raise standards, not just in New York, but across the country. Well, one point I want to make with the commissioner, and I think it's important for parents, because parents need to understand this. A line in the sand that says you're a level 3, you're proficient. You can be very close to that line or very far away. One of the concerns that I don't want to lose here is that there are four levels, 1, 2, 3, and 4. A low-level 2 versus a high-level 2 can be much more important than a high-level 2 compared to somebody just at level 3. So it's always important to look at the entire progress and where our kids are going.
But on the breadth and depth of the curriculum, and I realized that was the wrong clip of Steiner, so he didn't actually say those words in that clip. But we have another one where
he said... Well, let's do that one then, okay?
Well, I don't want to take another 50 seconds to play that clip, but the transcript says what I read before. If you only have 30 questions, you can't test the field of knowledge in math, arts, any subject with sufficient breadth and depth to avoid the problem we just discussed. So how do you broaden the curriculum now? How do you deepen the curriculum when it comes to teaching to these tests?
So you got to deepen the curriculum. It's not about teaching to the test. Test is a way to assess whether somebody has mastered the knowledge or the skills. That's all a test is. And the test has got to make sure we demand both more knowledge and more skills from our students. How do we do it? We've already ahead of this over the summer. We have been working with our principals on what's called the new core common standards, national standards that Commissioner Steiner supports. We've been actively working with the commissioner, making sure to implement. But we're already beginning that process. This fall, we're going to have our children doing more writing, which I think is critical. We're going to make sure that our teachers cover more subject matter, more content in the curriculum. And over the next several years, we'll migrate the system toward precisely what the commissioner and you were talking about, Brian.
But what does that say about the last 8 years? Because if you and the mayor suspected at least 4 years ago that the state tests were too easy compared to the national tests, and yet now you're sitting here after this all came to light and say now you have to change the curriculum. What was going on the last 8 years?
We were changing it. Look at the national test. I mean, the story that has to be written is how come New York City fourth graders are performing at the same level as the nation on the national test? And how come the rest of the state, while we went up 11 points in reading and 11 points in math, that's more than a year's learning, 11 points on a test, the rest of the state was flat. So we were making greater demands on our system. Now, you got to remember, we started way, way behind. You know, hindsight is a perfect thing, but you can't move a system overnight. There are no silver bullets in this game. There's no quick fixes. But our kids today are much better prepared. Do they have a long way to go? Of course they do. Do we need to make the curriculum yet more demanding? Yes. But we've been doing that. If we hadn't have done that, you wouldn't have seen this huge disparity between what New York City did and what the rest of the state. And remember, the rest of the state, Brian, these are kids, by and large, middle-class kids outside of the big cities in New York. So for our city to show up with an 11-point gain in English, an 11-point gain in math, those are big differences and differences we should take cognizance of.
Tim, a teacher in the Bronx, you're on WNYC with Schools Chancellor Joel Klein. Hi, Tim.
Hi. Mr. Klein sounds all over the map again, but I think a great example of how out of touch he is about 3 years ago when this easy test happened. I think it was three or two. But every teacher, and at the end of the test, I know, and other schools went up to each other and said, what was that? That test looked like it was for fifth graders instead of eighth graders. And we all were flabbergasted. And then a year later, we got to see Mr. Klein and Mayor Bloomberg waving the victory flag. And now, here we are, later, listening to this. It's just a demonstration of how completely out of touch they are.
Tim, how'd your students do on those tests that you thought were
amazing.
So easy?
Amazing. Amazing. I had kids, some kids in my class were absent 40 days, and they easily scored proficient.
Well, how did they do on this year's test, Tim?
I didn't get the scores yet.
Oh, okay.
See, the year of the easy test, we got the scores right away. This year, the scores went somewhere else, and they weren't distributed.
Well, you know, I first of all, thank you for teaching our students. I really appreciate that. Second of all, the tests needed to get more difficult. Nobody disputed it. I don't write the tests. I don't draft the tests. But I'm totally prepared to support more demanding tests, and I'm confident that you and your colleagues will bring our students to the level that they need.
We'll continue in a minute with New York City Schools Chancellor Joel Klein, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with New York City Schools Chancellor Joel Klein. Let's talk about some other things. The new school year is about to start. What are some of the things that you think people should look for that's new in the schools this year?
Be an exciting year for us, Brian. First of all, when school actually starts, we're opening up more school buildings than we have ever. And there'll be 25 new schools, and that's always exciting. We're opening up overall, as well as the new buildings, about 60 new schools throughout the city, giving people more opportunities. Second thing that's very important this year is we're doing a lot of work with technology so that students can get the benefit of learning online as well as learning directly in the classroom. So in some of our schools, we haven't had enough students to create a class, let's say, for advanced placement physics. Those students will be able now to take that course online. We're working with three major companies that have what's called learning platforms that are very sophisticated that will help our kids move forward at a more rapid rate. And those programs, one by a group called Pathfinder, one by Pearson, and one by an Israeli group called Time to Know, those things are going to be rolled out. And then finally, the most exciting thing, which has gotten national recognition, is we're moving our School of One model forward. And this is an interesting concept. Instead of focusing on children in a classroom, we focus on the individual child and let her move at her pace and use different ways, sometimes online, sometimes small groups, some of the writing things we were talking about before. And we've been piloting this and getting really big results with it. I see a lot of opportunity in this area to make sure we bring knowledge to our children. It doesn't only have to come in a classroom. It can come from other ways.
How do you pull off the School of One concept when classes tend to have, you know, 30-plus kids or almost 30 kids and at a time of budget cuts?
So the way we do it is the way we've done it. We've said to our School of One people, you've got to operate in the same budget as any other school operates. We now have, for example, several kids. We've knocked down classroom walls and so forth. You can have 80, 90 kids working together. But the beauty of it is the teacher's job is made different and in that respect made easier, because you have some kids who are online with a tutor while other kids are working in a small group. The teacher is teaching instead of the 25 children and trying to figure out how to teach the middle. She's teaching basically as part of a team, teaching 80 or 90. And one of the things I'd love to do in the fall, if it works for you, I'd love to do a radio show right there from the School of One with the kids and the teachers, because it's a very powerful concept. The biggest challenge is to make sure we have the technology, that the kids have the computers so that they can be online, to make sure that all the schools are properly wired for this. But it's the results we've gotten are really very encouraging.
And I'd love to. Let's see if we can arrange that.
We'll set that up.
Marjorie in Brooklyn, an assistant principal. You're on WNYC with Chancellor Klein. Hello.
Yeah, how are you? I have to say I've been in the school system for all over 20 years and feel really positively about the past 8 years and what's happening. But my question is this. Our school has gotten increasingly better test scores the last 3 years, and they've gotten an A on our report card. And I was just wondering how this year actually our scores dropped significantly and how that's going to affect our school report card, as well as, you know, principals who are up for tenure and have been, you know, working really hard, but all of a sudden a big drop in scores right now.
So thank you, first of all, for your comments, Marjorie, and obviously for the work you do in our schools. Everybody understands that when you change the benchmarks or you move the end zone, you've got to adjust fairly, and we will do that. We've always focused much more on student progress, and that is reflected in what's called the scale score, or the actual score that the school got, and we will look at that. The fact that you have more or fewer proficient kids is not nearly as important as to whether your children last year as in other years are making progress across the board. As I said to Brian before, if you have a kid who goes from a 2.5, basically a mid-level 2, to a 2.8, that's a much more important thing than a kid who goes from 2.9 to a 3.0 and gets marked proficient. So we'll apply this in a fair and, I think, in an effective way. And in that respect, both in terms of individual personnel and our schools, I actually think that the system will be strengthened. And the reason I think it'll be strengthened is because I think all of us acknowledge that we need to have more demanding standards, more demanding requirements for our children.
You talked about how the improvements on the national scores rival what's going on in the suburban districts. But there were stories like the one on Monday in the New York Times on the front page. I'm sure you read it. Headline, Triumph Fades on Racial Gap in City Schools. And it says there was a test score bubble that used that word bubble. And quote, the most painful part might well have been the evaporation of one of their signature accomplishments, the closing of the racial achievement gap, unquote. So is that the most painful part? And do you accept that premise that the achievement has evaporated?
No, I don't. In fact, the New York Times had an editorial today, in fact, that said the achievement gap, we had closed the achievement gap. I think it relied on one statistic rather than looking at all the statistics. Let me just say again, on the national tests, let's look at the fact that in fourth grade math, our African-American, our Hispanic students have gone up 8-10 points. In eighth grade math, our African-American students went up 8 points. While they were doing that, white students in the nation were going up 2 or 4 or 5 points. So we've closed that gap. We've closed the achievement gap with respect to graduation rates. You know, when I started this job, there were about 16,000 children that left the public schools in New York to go to CUNY. Today, there are about 25,000. Big numbers, the largest number of gaps have been our African-American and Latino students. So, yes, if you look solely at proficiency, that gap was affected. But if you look at overall scores on that test, our African-American Latino students are closing the gap. And so, Times editorial recognized that today.
So is there a next phase? You and Al Sharpton formed the Education Equality Project 2 years ago. Many people said strange bedfellows. Is that an active initiative today? And how do you try to move forward from here on the racial achievement gap?
Well, we move forward both in New York City by continuing to make sure our students improve, as they have been. And nationally, the Education Equality Project is still a national organization. It's now co-chaired by two people in Washington, one Michael Lomax from the United Negro College Fund, who's a distinguished educator, and Janet Merguia from the National Council on La Raza. So the three of us are working together to keep a focus on it. But let me take a second on this, Brian, because this is, you know, such an important issue, and you and I have talked about it. As we place more demands on the system, we can't lose focus on these racial and ethnic achievement gaps, because in the end, that's where we're going to see the greatest challenges. And America's long been bedeviled by those achievement gaps. And I think we as a country have got to make sure, for example, that every school in every community, that children have really first-rate, top-quality teachers. And we got to talk about that in a way that's candid, because all too frequently you see that kids in different schools are not getting the teachers they need and deserve, or not getting the opportunities, not getting the technology. So this issue of equity is a deep one, and we've got to address it forthrightly as a nation. This nation can't continue to have these massive racial and ethnic achievement gaps.
Stuart in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello, Stuart.
Hi. Good morning, everyone. So my questions are, why start the school year on Wednesday, September 8th, only to have the next 2 days the schools closed for Rosh Hashanah? I'm sure the Jewish holiday calendar came out a long time ago that it might have been wiser to start the school year on Monday, September 13th. That's number one. Number two, my daughter is entering first grade at PS 87, which many consider to be ground zero for the overcrowding debate. My son is 4 years old. Can Chancellor Klein guarantee that he will be able to attend the same elementary school as his sister?
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. First of all, as you know, it's a great school, and that's the problem with great schools is sometimes they get overcrowded. I wish I could guarantee it. What I can guarantee you is we're working around the clock, working with our elected officials. We even have a so-called war room on this issue of overcrowding, and we will do everything we can. Obviously, we would love to see your son and daughter in the same school. It's very interesting to me on that issue. About 5-7 years ago when I started, there were actually people from out of the zone and out of the community coming to PS 87 because basically there were excess placements. Now, as you say, people are just in droves showing up for the school. I think that's a tribute to the quality of the school, the improvement of the school. But in the end, obviously, we've got to make sure that all of our kids in the west side, the east side, or any side of the city are getting into high-quality, good schools. And we're working to make sure that's true. But it's in a sense, a tribute to the work that 87, 199, and others are doing, that parents are so eager to attend them. On the start of school day,
Linger on that for a second. Is it a matter of construction, like where all those Trump apartments have gone up on the Upper West Side? I'm not sure if that affects 87 per se, but I've heard complaints of not enough space planning. People seem not to know what to expect if thousands of Ratner apartments actually go up at Atlantic Yards. Does construction money follow development? Do developers have certain requirements?
That's part of the issue that you raise. And increasingly, we're addressing those issues. In other words, building schools into new developments, real estate developments and other things. So whether it's on the Ratner development, or we have one coming up now literally on Spruce Street in Lower Manhattan, where it's going to be right part of the building. That's one of the strategies we're using. But there is a second problem, and that is the new school is still not PS 87. And known and established and good schools, whether it's PS 234 downtown or PS 6 or PS 199, parents, really, those are known schools that people address. So we have to do both. But it's not just a Manhattan issue. You know, we've had population explosions in Queens. And one of the things that's fascinating is it's clear to me that a lot more people are now wanting to go to the public schools in New York. I think that reflects the fact that a school like 87, where a lot of parents in the past had choices, are now finding that school increasingly desirable.
And on the start of the school year, I can tell you as a public middle school parent myself, this is the buzz of the parents over the summer is, why start school on Wednesday if Thursday and Friday are off for the Jewish holiday? Why not just start next Monday?
So I'm glad you got back to that question. First of all, what middle school?
I'm going to protect my child's privacy.
Okay, fair. I'm sorry about that. So we wanted to move the opening of school. We try to negotiate. We have to negotiate our calendar with the United Federation of Teachers. We had proposed to them there was a day called Brooklyn Queens Day, which our children are not now in school. That's in the middle of the weekday. Parents are not off. We thought that was a sensible way to work this out. They didn't want to do it. We're constrained. We don't have a lot of school days, and so we needed that day. It's unfortunate we couldn't reach an agreement on it, because if we had, we could have started on Monday and actually then picked up another day in the middle of the week where, as I say, parents are working anyhow.
So blame the teachers' union.
No, it's just our inability to get to it. We're not here to blame. It was unfortunate we didn't get to an agreement with them on
it. One other quick thing, though it's not a cheery topic either, the budget. How do you see the state and city's woes affecting the coming school year? How will you compensate?
Well, this year we've actually, I think in part because of the mayor's leadership, what he did I thought was exactly the right thing. Instead of giving large raises to our employees, he put the money in the budget. That literally saved us thousands and thousands of jobs. Now, the mayor has been clear. He likes to give raises to our employees, but in deciding that this was not a time for raises but a time to keep personnel, even though it's a tight time, I think that we're going to be able to successfully navigate through this year. I've talked to principals and others. My concern, Brian, is next year. Our state is in trouble. We lose federal stimulus money, and we have got to get focused on that right away.
Who has to do what?
Several things. I think the state has got to stop delaying its budgets. It's got to prioritize education. I think the federal government's got to come up with a program. You can't do this where you give people $1 billion a year stimulus money and then in year three just fall off. That's not a way to do it. So they have got to tie stimulus money to real reform. I know the city is working around the clock to try ways to cut monies, to save monies, and prioritize education. But I want to be candid. We're going to face a challenge in the next 12 months as we gear up for next school year.
All right. New York City Schools Chancellor Joel Klein, thank you very much for spending this time with us. Good luck in the new school year. And let's try to arrange something at the – forgive me, I forgot the name. Is it a Teach One program?
School of One.
School of One. Chancellor Klein, thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC coming up next. The trend toward open source college textbooks. Stay with us.